This is the March 26 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois. Our special guest for the day is Eric Mosby. He is the general manager at Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois. That is an ethanol production plant. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, by the way. You can find us online at willag.org, WILLAG.org. Eric Mosby, welcome to our program. Why don't you start and tell me a little bit about yourself and the plant there in Palestine?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me today. I've been here about, a little over 13 years now. It's flied by. I started back when the ethanol industry was really taking off and Lincoln Land was still a very young business, and we just had our 15-year anniversary last summer, going on 16 this year. So we've been here a little while now. Lincoln Land, we grind about 21 million bushels of corn into almost 63 million gallons of ethanol now. And we've done that over time and crept our rate up. We were originally built as a 40 million gallon plant and have just slowly debottlenecked over the years and taking it up on rate. And we source a lot of local corn and primarily focus on getting most of our bushels and all of our bushels, if we can, directly from the producers. And so we try to focus on that. And it's been a great business here.
You have been shut down or not taking corn in for this week, is that right?
Well, we actually had planned a maintenance outage this week, and then when things started to unravel with the virus, we had to cancel contractors, and so we actually decided to stay open this week, although we decided not to take corn and do some work that we had scheduled in grains. But the plant is running, and we plan to start taking corn again on Monday.
Let's turn to some questions from our other plant panelists. Dale Durkles, you have a question?
You know, I'm curious if you said you chose to stay open, but yet you had a planned downtime. Why did you choose to stay open and keep grinding after the collapse we've had in the ethanol price itself?
Well, it had a lot to do with just physical logistics and contractor availability. We had a lot of contractors scheduled in here. About 180 people were scheduled to arrive, and then as things got worse, we started having contractors call to cancel, and we could see that it was going to be a problem maintaining the work schedule. So given that and the uncertainty surrounding workers, we decided just to stay open. And one of the reasons, and yes, you're right, the markets have really, really collapsed, but we've got commitments, we've got contracts to fill, and mainly we're focused on meeting the needs of our livestock producers right now with our DDGs.
Ellen Dearden, that seems like a good transition point for a question from you.
Boy, it sure does, because there's a sure lack of DDGs available in central Illinois for cattle feeders, and many rations are starting to be switched both on the cattle and the hog side with more meal. So lack of DDGs and ethanol plants telling producers, livestock producers here, that there's no more DDGs available to them. Do you foresee that to be a problem in your area?
Well, I think they're going to be scarce. We're going to do the best we can to meet our commitments. We are issuing load numbers. We're going to start issuing load numbers again next week to, I guess, our usual more local customers first. I think the limiting factor for an ethanol plant right now from a physical standpoint is just fuel demand. If the ethanol isn't picked up in the next couple of weeks and the markets continue to do what they're doing, then ethanol plants will have to slow further or shut down just because you don't have a place to go with your ethanol and get it into the fuel supply. If we can keep our ethanol customers picking up and there's enough gasoline demand to keep the ethanol flowing, at least for the medium, short to medium term, we plan to run and try to meet the needs of the livestock producers. keep in mind everything's changing so quickly, and the markets, if they unravel further, we'd have to reevaluate that. But at least right now, that's our short and medium-term plan.
Just for clarification's sake, so your ability to continue to serve is based on the amount of storage you have available if ethanol is not picked up.
Right, right. And a lot of plants usually don't have more than 10 to 15 days of operating time when it comes to their ethanol storage capabilities. So far, we're running at a reduced rate, and so far we've just really adjusted our plant rates to meet the local and regional demand for ethanol from our plant to our usual customers. And if they were to start slowing down because their tanks are full, then we would have no choice at that time.
Aaron Curtis, a question from you.
Yeah, Eric, just curious, obviously ethanol, as you know and the panelists know, is obviously front of mind for the corn market right now and, of course, the demand profile in general. But I guess I'd be curious what kind of conversations you're having with producers right now, what the concern level is from the producer level on where ethanol goes, and you know, if you have delivery scheduled from a producer standpoint into the future. What kind of conversations are you having right now with those folks?
Yeah, we're certainly fielding a lot of calls from our corn producers, and obviously with the situation, everybody's well aware of what's going on. We see basis weakening, and although here at our particular location it hasn't weakened quite as much as in some locations, I think. And so some people are talking about doing some basis contracts and those type of things just to get something covered. But it's really tough to sell into this market with just so much uncertainty. And, you know, it's a long way until fall, and it's a long way really to get through the planting season. So I guess right now we're really just sort of advising people to ride it out, see where this thing ends up. Let's see what the government stimulus does, and get some demand going again before we react.
On that note, there is a difference, I think, and you'll have to tell me for sure, between the lack of demand based on number of miles being driven, which has dropped substantially or sharply, and the very low price of crude oil and the profit margins for an ethanol plant. Can you talk about the difference between those two and what it would look like when demand for miles driven returns, but the price of crude oil is likely to remain low?
Yeah, you know, everyone's got a little bit of a different take on that. And we used to talk a lot about $50 crude oil here being a good number that it got the discretionary ethanol gallons into the marketplace. But if you look back over the last year, ethanol is really coming off a pretty poor 2019. And we were sitting and still are sitting on very high ethanol stocks nationwide. And so with the RFS in place and the way the market's sorted out, I guess I think we've already gotten a lot of those discretionary gallons that would have been blended in a high crude market. Those are already gone. And so with crude oil at $22 a barrel, that's certainly not going to help anything, but I don't know that it can hurt a lot more than it's already hurt us at this point. We already had pretty poor demand and gasoline demand tailing off most of last year.
Dale, do you have another question?
Yeah, I got a couple, really. Number one, Eric, you said you were running at a reduced capacity at this point. I wondered, number one, how much you're running down or how much reduction you're basically doing. The other question I have is looking at the corn from last year's crop, are you finding that the quality issues might be reducing the gallonage you're getting out of each bushel of corn?
You know, the crop last year certainly was, everyone knows how 2019 was, and we really expected quality to be an issue, and I think it was in a lot of areas. It seemed like here, of course, the crop was wet, but we really didn't have you know, the plant has really handled it well, and we take up to 20% corn here, and usually our averages aren't quite that, especially or at least in the fall, and then they tail off. But the plants handled the crop pretty well, and actually we've been surprised at how well the crop's done. So it hasn't fallen off as far as plant efficiency as much as we thought it would. And to your first question, we've turned this plant down, our plant down before during times that when the markets get tough. And so you're looking for a spot to run where you can still maintain some energy efficiency and not sacrifice too much, but not produce as many gallons as you could. And so right now we're running about 70%, and that's really about as low as we like to go without losing a lot of or some energy efficiency, and then that just makes the situation a little worse. So we'd like to run a little faster, but right now we're going to wait and see what this ethanol demand does over the next couple weeks.
Ellen, more questions from you if you have them?
I guess I'm curious, are you still booking corn for the summer? Are you booking corn for fall? Or, you know, do you have bids out there?
Yeah, we have bids out there. We're buying corn today. We've got coverage out a few weeks, so we're not in a dire situation as far as operating. In the short term, we're trying to cover DDG contracts and see how things look. And about, you know, I'm looking at about a 2-week plan right now to get those covered and then see what the markets look like. We would still continue to buy corn. And if the market's not there when we get there, then we can evaluate it then. So, you know, if you look at gasoline demand, I think it's going to be down here in April significantly, obviously. 40 to 50% is what we're really looking at for April demand. Hopefully it's better than that and maybe things turn around. But at some point, demand is going to be some percentage of what it was and going to be that for the rest of 2020. And somebody's going to have to make that, you know, make the ethanol. The octane's needed, and it's a great addition to the gasoline fuel supply. So hopefully what plants are doing is just working hard to make sure they're the plant that can be there to make it.
And Aaron Curtis, one more question from you if you have it.
Just real quick, Eric, a lot of talk again, once again this week about some of the, you know, small refinery exemptions. Sounds like, you know, White House isn't going to appeal that at this point. We'll see if that changes or not. But I guess from your standpoint, can you talk a little bit about how that's affected the industry and what you think that could mean if the small refinery exemptions are limited here going forward, and what that would mean maybe for the outlook for ethanol as we move more into the future and hopefully more towards a normal pattern of ethanol production?
Yeah, so that was certainly a little bit of good news this week, I guess, that the administration decided not to appeal that decision, and that really kind of takes the wind out of the small refinery exemption sales. So what we really need is for those gallons to come back on the market. We need for the EPA to push to set their volumes at higher levels, and not granting those exemptions going forward certainly will help demand. You've always got the limitation of the physical gallon going out the terminal, but it can't be a bad thing that those exemptions don't get approved anymore. They certainly did hurt things through the price of the RIN, the renewable identification number, and limited blending.
Hey, one last question for you. Green Plains last fall said they were tuning their plants towards DDGs. I don't know exactly what that means. You talked a great deal about DDGs. Is your plant primarily focused on DDGs as the profit center or ethanol as the profit center?
Well, we look at it all together, and it's one equation for us. So, but DDGs are a bigger part of the business than most people, or I think most would realize. And it drives a lot of margin, especially when you see it get this tight. You're focused on anywhere you can focus to gain a little more revenue and have a possible profit. But what Green Plains is talking about is what a lot of the folks in the industry are looking at, are upgrading their protein levels. And there are several technologies out there that people are evaluating to do that. And we're no different. We've been looking at that very closely as well. and we haven't pulled the trigger on anything here yet. Just felt like there was a little bit too much uncertainty yet in what that protein was going to be worth going forward. But when you hear Green Plains talk about that, that's what they're looking at. And I still think with ethanol being probably close to 80% of the revenue, it's going to be hard to say that ethanol is not going to be your profit center. But certainly a higher protein DDG product could greatly enhance that.
Eric, I know you have to rush off to another meeting, so thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
That's Eric Mosby. He's with Lincoln Land Agri-Energy out of Palestine, Illinois. Now let's continue our Commodity Week program. I'll start Dale Durkles with you. We've talked a great deal about ethanol and demand. I'm wondering what you think that means for the corn market, short and longer term.
Well, the longer term is really hard to difficult or, you know, hard to really envision at this particular moment because you've got this ingredient of, number one, you know, how long are we going to persist with $20 crude? Number two, you know, how long is this economic slowdown going to remain intact that we're dealing with here and the impact that has upon miles driven, which also is the other component of demand for ethanol through the energy sector. So you can't even really see the long term all that well. I thought it was interesting. They're continuing to produce filling commitments. So it may mean that, you know, the short term and grind as far as corn is concerned may not get bludgeoned quite as bad as people think at this point. But, you know, you go out a couple of months and, you know, those plants get contracts filled or people push back on filling those contracts, you know, then we're going to see some issues. You know, we've had people talk, you know, ethanol grind down, what, three? I saw a number today, even 400 million bushel. So, you know, it's just really a wild card that we can't even envision right now.
Ellen Dearden, you mentioned the livestock sector and substitutions for DDGs. How much of a problem do you think this has created for that industry?
It has created a big problem for some of my subscribers who are hog feeders who are trying to figure out some awful new rations on a quick shot. One fellow told me today that we're going back to some of the old rations that we used years ago and see whether they still work. They're looking for rate of gain. They're not sure how they're going to get it, but DDG's prices that he quoted to me this morning were up around $200 a ton versus $100 to $120 was probably the long-term average.
So this has a trickle-through effect across agriculture in many ways. Aaron Curtis, what are you seeing from the elevator side as it relates to what's been happening in the marketplace?
Well, I think obviously watching the ethanol sector since last Tuesday when most ethanol plants dropped bases and some by a substantial amount. And ever since then, it's just been a kind of a cautionary environment right now for those elevators that sell into ethanol plants. Just a lot of uncertainty right now, waiting for some stability, continuing to see some weakness, especially out west with bids really dropping pretty hard in the nearby slot. And looks like most ethanol plants still taking delivery, like Eric said, but some are no bid. Some are just really backing off their nearby bid, maybe pulling some deferred bids. It's kind of all over the place, but obviously slowdowns have been pretty common across the ethanol sector and a few shutdowns here and there. And, Valero's talk about force majeure on some deliveries here in the nearby slots is creating a lot of conversation, especially out in areas to the west. So just a lot of uncertainty now looking for, you know, hopefully this market kind of resets, at least on the basis side at some point. I think we have seen some better interest on the export side. River markets continue to hang in there okay, continuing to be fairly competitive on a world scale through the first part of June. We hope that continues to help to make up a little bit of this demand we're expected or going to lose here from the ethanol side. I agree with Dale here in that 300 million bushel number talked about a lot as people continue to do the back of the napkin math here on what this could mean. We'll probably offset that a little bit with some corn demand, like Ellen mentioned, working back into feed rations, replacing DGGs, and, you know, we're seeing some areas in the Southwest, where sorghum basis is pretty firm, and you know that may be replaced by some corn demand as well. So the net result may be a little bit not quite as worse as 300 million. We'll see as time goes on. We'll see how long this lasts. But obviously, corn basis at the ethanol plant pretty fresh on the elevator's mind across the Corn Belt this week, Todd.
Am I right, Aaron, that this is about the price of crude oil, the number of miles driven, storage capacity and profits at the ethanol plant, and storage capacity at the refinery or somewhere along that supply chain?
Yeah, what some of the verbiage we're hearing from some of the ethanol plants is that concern, right, that you can only store so much ethanol that you produce. And, you know, if that continues to be the case, then that's really going to limit some of the production here as we continue to move forward.
One thing Aaron kind of alluded to, getting away from the ethanol direct question, is on this livestock feeding, we're not going to see wheat fed and we're not going to see milo fed. Both of them still have smoking hot basis, good export demand on the milo side of things, and wheat right now is in demand for export. So we're going to be feeding more corn. And so even though the basis risk is there for corn, because we got such a big pump up from the ethanol processor demand since the late part of last summer, and that's gone. So maybe the board is going to start moving and the basis is going to, you know, weaken even more so here, but the board will move. I mean, we haven't had the board move for months. We're talking corn now.
Now, I think you're probably right in that mix, Alan, because, you know, when you look at it, it'll be a little bit different depending on where you're at. If you're close to an export point, other than as we get into summer along the Illinois River, but if you're close to an export point, you know, you got a chance to see things move. You got livestock markets and livestock demand for corn that's going to continue to be relatively robust. You know, the hog and pig report we had today, market hog inventory was up 4% from what it was a year ago. So, you know, the numbers are certainly there. And even though, you know, there's been a lot of volatility in the livestock here of recent, it's a matter that, you know, the wholesale sector of that marketplace has to reorient or close. You know, meat's not now going as aggressively into the restaurant industry, not going at all for the most part, but yet people are still eating, so they've got to reconfigure and, you know, reorient stuff going into the retail pipeline, which I think will continue to be robust. And on the export sector, you know, we have had sporadic things like today's sales were good. You know, China was listed in that. Mexico has been a bigger one. They were kind of an ordinary buyer today, but we've got to stay alert to the fact when you look at China in particular, the livestock feeders, the pork industry in particular over there is screaming to wanting corn. And, you know, you're really kind of structured in a situation. If in the world you want corn, the only place you can really go for corn for big quantity is come here in the U.S. So we might see the corn export number, you know, outperform some of the latent expectation, but that offsets what we're going to lose in ethanol probably if maybe not altogether all of that, but it could give the board a lift. But I agree with you. I think if anything, you see the board having some strength and the basis level is going to sag to offset a lot of it.
So complicating this matter, it appears to me, and there'll be second crop corn that's coming in from Brazil if they can get it into the marketplace in that June-July timeframe. At the same time, the Illinois River will be closing down, and that will complicate matters for a large part of the middle part of the state. Aaron, I know you've got to be thinking about this and what the impact will be.
Yeah, you know, not a good combination if you got an ethanol industry that's struggling and river closures. So I think from a producer standpoint, you got to be pretty cognizant of that. And I think for the most part, most producers are aware of what's happening. We've been talking about this, right, for quite a few months, but the calendar is quickly creeping up on us in terms of that July 1st date. So I think from a producer standpoint, you need to be pretty cognizant, especially with if you've got a lot of on-farm bushels that still need to move. You need to be pretty aware of what could be the situation here as we continue to move forward. You know, the hope is that the ethanol sector does improve as we get into the summer, but that's still a pretty large unknown at this point. So if you take out another piece of the, at least here in Illinois, another piece of the puzzle here that could continue to have some pressure on corn base as we move through the latter part of the summer. So we got to keep aware of that here as we move forward and factor that into your marketing plan, especially if you still got grain to move here as we move into the spring time frame.
I know you've been doing that, Ellen Dearden. Any follow-up?
No, I am hearing just a little bit more concern in this area about quality issues and finding the right home for those bushels. And so that also is driving some producers.
So let's go through what producers need to do at this point, if anything. We can start with old crop. I don't think we need to talk about soybeans at this point, but corn, and then new crop, corn and soybeans. Dale Durkles, why don't you to begin for me?
Well, it goes back, and Ellen and I did a meeting here 10 days or so ago, and I think the things we were talking about there probably are still pretty appropriate for old crop corn, and it's, we were talking about, you know, get the basis tied up in some fashion or another. If you do a basis contract or sell the cash and re-own paper, there are different ways that you can get that done. I think that's important to do at this point. Flat pricing stuff, I'm not quite as concerned about right now, but because I'd like to maintain that pricing window open. You know, one thing I went back and looked at, looking at long-term things, and it really kind of fits into the scenario here, and if the stock market can hold itself together tomorrow, might end up proving out at least we could have a short-term low there, which will have psychological impacts. I think there's room for a lift on paper anyway, as far as corn prices are concerned, on the board. And, you know, 375, 385, July futures, I don't think is really out of reach. New crop, right at the moment, I'm not interested in doing anything. I went back a year ago and looked, and from a long history standpoint, from the 1st of March to the 1st of July, every year, December corn has always gotten back to that crop insurance guarantee, which in this case was 388. And so, you know, I'm sitting here being patient as far as pricing the corn is concerned. I just don't see any reason to get excited about it yet.
Ellen Dearden?
I would agree. I'm just a little bit more concerned about quality of bushels, and so I'm a very willing seller of bushels in the cash market for guys that have stuff on farm yet. I also went back and looked at rallying into this March acreage report and March grain stocks report. Well, we've rallied into that typically in the next week or so. We've lost what we gained. So I think producers need to be aware that there is some downside risk in the board to go back down and maybe recheck the lows that we put in a week or so ago.
And Aaron?
It just doesn't feel like much interest right now. We, from a hedging standpoint, right, it's been pretty quiet, obviously, since this board broke. And, you know, I get the sense from a lot of producers, or at least a few of them anyway, that think this thing will kind of straighten itself out here as we move into the spring and summer. Just from a straight future standpoint, nearby, like kind of piggybacking what Dale said a little bit, you know, 370 to 380 range looks like a selling target here as we get closer. I think it's been somewhat positive here this week that corn's been able to hang in there, at least on the futures side, with all the negativity surrounding the ethanol sector. Obviously, the export side is continuing to be somewhat positive, and hope we continue to see a lot of competitiveness. We just got to be careful that we don't price ourselves out of the world market by prices firming up too much here. But I think it's a somewhat favorable sign that corn futures have been able to kind of hold this 330, 340 mark with all the bad news we've thrown at it. And I would look for 370, 380 on the upside on futures if you have any pricing decisions you got to make, especially for those basis contracts, which we know there's still a lot. Quite a few of those across the country that are unpriced at this point. New, and for new crop, Todd, I agree with Dale. I don't think there's much to do right here. I still have a hard time believing that the futures corn managed money is going to stay this short through the whole growing season, because that would be a pretty rare event. And typically they will try to move a little more towards a net even or even a net long at some point during the growing season. And I think that would be the opportunity at that point to get a little more new crop priced.
Ellen, you mentioned next Tuesday's prospective plantings report and the grain stocks numbers as well will be released at 11 o'clock Central Time. Do you have a feel for what producers have told USDA?
I think that whatever they told USDA 3 weeks ago is probably not even close to what ends up happening. Historically speaking, yes, the March intentions report isn't all that far off from the final, but I think things have really changed in the three-week time period since that data was accumulated.
Anybody else have strong feelings on this one?
I would concur. You know, the planting numbers, they're good for about 10 seconds, you know, because everybody's going to realize, you know, we've had corn-soybean ratio shift a whole lot, and the break in the market as it is, you know, whatever numbers we see put down will be a lot different in the back end. I do think you need to take note of the corn stocks number, though, because that can tell us a little bit about that demand coming from feed and also the residual. You know, the one we had for last fall was extremely high, and so there's some anxiousness here that, you know, this one will be a little bit softer offsetting that, and hence we've got these number expectations of 8.1, 8.2 billion as far as corn stocks are concerned. But historically, the trade has tended to overestimate the corn stocks number that the USDA comes out by a small margin, so we'll have to see.
Anything you all want to talk about that I haven't asked yet?
Well, I think maybe talk a little bit about beans real quick. Todd, we've seen the meal nearby spreads invert with some of the hope either that there's some disruptions in South American port loadings and especially maybe meal rations work a little bit back into to feed rations here with the concern about the lack of dry distillers grains and soybean basis. Had been fairly firm, broke a little bit here across the Midwest here late this week, but soybean basis continues to be somewhat firm. Crush margins both on the cash side and the board side continue to be pretty well supported. So really kind of a divergent story from what we're seeing on the corn side. Bean, at least on the cash side, continues to be kind of a positive story here as we move into the first part of April.
You know, it's kind of important that when you're looking at the beans that, you know, kind of forget Brazil right now. I don't think they're going to be nearly as affected, and, you know, their export game is already ramped up, you know, but the one thing we're seeing talked about, you go into China, it's crushers are having a hard time getting beans or having a hard time getting meal, and, you know, we're seeing crush margins really move up rather well over there. Meanwhile, you go down into Argentina where they're actively harvesting a crop and yet producers aren't selling anything. And we've got to put all this in context of the reality that, you know, they in the southern hemisphere now, especially deep southern hemisphere like southern Brazil and down into Argentina, they're moving into a period of time where their flu season ramps up. And we've got to remember coronavirus that we're dealing with here, COVID, is really a different strain of flu, so to speak. So, you know, we got to be careful and keep an eye on what goes on down there as they move through their fall and into winter and what impact that may have on transportation. And we've already seen some hiccups in Argentina, but if producers don't willingly sell beans, if they don't willingly market beans, if we're kind of slow to move them into the pipeline, that really has a bigger impact over into bean meal because they are year in, year out, you know, the number one meal exporter in the world. So we've got to keep an eye on what goes on in Argentina, and that can come back and impact our meal market here in the U.S.
Meal basis versus Central Illinois, which is easily reportable data, is up $18 in five weeks. And so, you know, when we talk about usually when you see a rally, you don't see the basis improve. That's what we're seeing in meal. So that, to me, is the real story.
Yeah, down in Argentina, seen some meal numbers that have gone from a little bit of a discount to the board down there up to about $5 a ton premium now. And that's been over about the last three and a half weeks. So, you know, the whole meal sector is changing a whole lot. And then as far as beans are concerned, that's important because that's the primary product we produce. So as we keep an eye on things, keep an eye on that. The other thing, going back into some timing things, and I went back and looked at some of these here about a week ago. The low we put in beans and bean meal looks like both of them are going to stand up to be, you know, 16 week lows, which is really a half cycle there itself. But it says, you know, that can be turned upwards now. And so I think in terms of beans, you know, there might be a little bit more willingness to push, or a little bit more ease for that number price-wise to go higher at this point. But meanwhile, we're still dealing with a lot of beans. We got a big crop in Brazil right now, and actually a decent crop in Argentina, although those numbers have dropped off a little bit because of dryness in southern Brazil and Argentina. But we could see bean futures still float, you know, just over the $9 mark, but I don't know that we got a whole lot more than that in it.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I think Ellen Dearden from AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, will start with you.
I think we do have basis risk in this corn market, maybe not so much in the beans. I'm more willing to lock in basis. And for people who will be affected by the Illinois River closure, if you're going to be harvesting beans early, you might even want to, harvesting corn early, you may even want to consider locking in some fall basis as well.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about bean basis. I know we've still got a few beans to buy across the Corn Belt here, so keep an eye on that. Might be an opportunity to at least lock in a portion of the cash contract here by doing a basis contract on soybeans, so keep an eye on that. Of course, crop report next week, and we'll continue to watch these weekly ethanol reports out on Wednesday morning, expecting production to continue to decline here with energy markets continuing to do what they're doing. But energy sector is going to be the main focus of conversation, it looks like, at least into April for the corn market.
And Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois.
You know, like it or not, you know, politics and the outside markets are still big ingredients to keep an eye on here at this point. It's kind of interesting as we're speaking. We had another day of good closes both on the Dow and on the S&P 500. And if we end up closing firm again tomorrow, we really set up the stage for at least a short-term low in the stock market and could see this rebound move a little bit higher here yet. And as that occurs, that will give the grain markets potentially a little bit of room to breathe as we go forward for the short term. Long term, still got to worry that, you know, we could take a dip in stocks depending upon how this whole disease issue works out and how it affects economic activity.
You've been listening to Commodity Week, recorded Thursday, the 26th day of March. You can hear the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Aaron Curtis, Ellen Dearden, and Dale Durkles, along with our special guest from Lincoln Land Agri Energy out of Palestine, Illinois, Eric Mosby. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.